Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. I just wanted to let you know that in this episode, my audio is a little wonky and my internet connection isn't that good. I don't know why. Before we went live, we tested everything and it sounded fine. As soon as we started streaming, my audio didn't sound good and the internet connection got a little shaky. Toward the end, it's all fine. But for the first two-thirds, my audio is kind of muffled and a little scratchy, so I'm sorry about that. But this is a really great episode. I don't even talk that much. It's mostly Dan McAdams and Ryan Dawson, so definitely check it out. And without any further ado, let's get into The Four Horsemen with Dan McAdams.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. This is the 15th installment of The Four Horsemen. We've only had one of them removed so far. We'll see if this changes that. But as always, we're bringing you the best guests. We're only going for an hour today, so we're just going to skip all the introductions. But we, of course, got Eric Jackman, Ryan Dawson, and our special guest today is Daniel McAdams, the executive director for the Ron Paul Institute and co-host on the Liberty Report. Daniel, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm really happy to be with you. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is a monumental meeting right here. So I didn't even realize, but I guess you and Ryan, you guys actually know each other kind of well. You've done a lot of correspondence and stuff. I had no idea, but how far back does that go?
I think it goes back a few years. We had a mutual friend, and I've watched Ryan's stuff for a long time, and I think I was on his show once, but no, it's been definitely a few years.
You may have been when I was working with Sabelle. I think, yeah, right after Lou Rockwell, it's possible. Michael Kyle, of course, was an Irish journalist we both knew. He, 4 days ago, it had been 5 years to the day, May 11th, since he passed away.
Yeah.
And I'll always kick myself for not answering that Skype call, but probably nothing I could have done. But yeah, may he rest in peace. He did a lot of great work.
Yep.
And unfortunately for Daniel and I, we had like long conversations, first on Facebook, then on Twitter. Both were deleted. For me, both Twitter and Facebook.
Gone.
And of course. Of course, they banned Daniel for calling Sean Hannity by his nickname.
That's the one his mother gave him.
I think I missed that one. What did they call him? Trump's toilet?
Retarded.
There's no better way to get banned off of Twitter than going after Sean Hannity, though. I mean, what a ghoul.
Yeah, I got a few. Cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What'd you do? I don't know. I said a fact.
Yeah. So I imagine in the Paul household, they're pretty proud of Rand right now for blocking that aid to Ukraine. That must be a moment of celebration. Am I right, Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great move. I mean, you know, it's easy to say, well, it's going to pass anyway. But you guys know how these things work. It's all about momentum. The thing was going like Reed Coverdale's truck down the road with a big old friggin' piece of equipment on the back, right? 80 mph. And all of a sudden, Rand stands up and says, hang on a minute. Can I at least get an inspector general to have a look and make sure this is not all going up Zelensky's nose? And they said, no freaking way. You know, this is ridiculous. Do you hate freedom? So, yeah, I mean, they're going to vote on it next week, probably. But in the interim, it gives the opportunity at least to, you know, to for people to take a deep breath, for Americans to say, crap, I can't even get, you know, the inflation's out the window, you know, baby food, you know, maybe this isn't such a great idea. So I think just the pause, even though it ultimately probably will go, is a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of Ukrainian flags disappear from people's social media bios over the last few days. Like, they're all like, yeah, I stand with Ukraine. But then when you find out, oh, they're going to send $40 billion away when gas is, you know, $6 a gallon and I can't buy any food and everything's going to hell here back at home. I don't think so. So it just changes the way people look at it.
Well, there's been like three next new things since Ukraine, right? They had to rage out against Elon and then abortion. Or, you know, lack of ability to kill babies, whatever, you know. So Ukraine, that's in the goldfish brain. That's three new things ago. You know, that's way back there with COVID, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
$40 billion is more than the second largest military expenditure. I mean, think about it. We're spending $700 to $800 billion a year. That's more than the next like 30 largest militaries put together, right? And we wanted to send them more in aid than what Russia spends. And it would it just be throwing it in the fireplace because that war is done. I mean, even with our best gear, they'd still lose that war because the artillery is already in place. That's over. What I'm worried about is Finland. They're on a suicide mission. This is how far we are in our own end zone. We're hoping like Turkey will block them from joining NATO.
The Turk is like, we need a few billion and it'll be okay.
Yeah, they'll take the Erdogan will take the prize. But with we're so far in our own end zone, we're like, can we have money for our own babies and maybe kill less of them? No, we're going to spend $40 billion on war, 80 Nazis, but you can't have baby formula. And if we find any, we're going to send it to Mexico.
You know,
that's not a joke.
$40 billion, all I could get was friggin' Bono to perform down in the subway station. What the hell? I couldn't even get like Cher down there to bomb. You know, I mean, the $40 billion is basically money laundering. It's coming out of the taxpayers' pocket and going right back to, you know, Raytheon and all of those big companies who stand to gain immensely from, you know, sending armaments and selling equipment over to Ukraine. So it's basically just a big money laundering scheme.
That's what Ukraine is.
And has been for 8 years, you know, no question about it. But Finland's interesting because the prime minister, she's 34 years old. If you look at her resume, I mean, there's so much of this. You see it in Olaf Scholz. You see it in the, forget her name, the foreign minister of Germany. You see it in Liz Truss in the UK. These are people of zero consequence. They have done literally nothing in their life. They've come up through, maybe come up through a party, or they've come up this way or that. Maybe they've had a little help from Soros or whatever. But these are people of zero consequence, zero intellectual heft. And so when you see this little 34-year-old chickie saying, hey, let's join NATO, that sounds great. you know, it's just, it's astonishing. You know, the leaders have always sucked, but at least a few of them have actually been fairly smart, or at least some of the, you know, the people in the second frontiers have actually been fairly smart. We're left with the dumbest of the dumb, and they're leading us down a path.
Yeah, it's, there's a lot of these young leaders from the World Economic Forum pushes a lot of these people. But I was thinking as you were explaining that, did she come from musical theater? We do have a bunch of actors, right, that came out of theater. We've got Macron, we've got Zelensky, we've got Trudeau, all pretty young as far as heads of state go. And Zelensky came out of nowhere. I mean, he literally is a comedian from Ihor Kolomoisky's television network's program about becoming president. And then he became president. Sick. Price of blow must be going up too, by the way. You mentioned Raytheon. I was thinking, you know, drug cartels are going to make a lot of money. That guy.
I mean, it's like even the CIA is getting lazy because these, like, these things are just writing themselves. You know, they're just rehashing them. You know, this, he played it. Oh, hey, I got a great idea. Okay, get a dude who played president on TV and then make him president. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Great idea. And it's rubbing our nose in it.
He plays piano with his dick. Oh, this is awesome. Everyone's going to love this.
Anytime I hear the Russian foreign minister or Putin, or any of them speak, and then I like cut to Kamala Harris or Joe Biden trying to speak, I'm embarrassed. I feel sorry for them. Every time I see Kamala or Biden on the microphone, I cringe because I'm thinking, oh, poor America. Because we had very elegant, at least they could speak, presidents and vice presidents in the past, right? And now we have Russia is a big country. Ukraine is a smaller country.
Yeah, Eric, how did it, what was the de-evolution of presidential eloquency like? How far?
We went from Ask Not from Mr. Kennedy to we need wall. we need wall and border security. Okay. And Rosie O'Donnell has been put on the kill list. She's on my kill list, if you can believe that or not, Dan. She's a big designated target for the kill list. Yeah, we've fallen a long way, man. And yeah, Brandon's not steering the ship, and it's like you said, Dan, they don't even need to write a new script anymore. I mean, what they're doing is just, is playing out in real time, and it's not even like shocking or surprising, sadly. So
they made a Ministry of Truth.
Yeah.
To edit tweets.
Yeah, at least she seems really, you know, nonpartisan and independent-minded. It doesn't seem like she's just, like, totally backing the Ukraine narrative at all. You know, you see her profile picture. It's, I think, the American flag's after the Ukraine flag. And you look through her tweets, and it's all about Russiagate and how evil WikiLeaks is. And, you know, it's just like, wow, you guys, it was the worst person.
I think, if anything, this creates a great opening, though, for libertarians and non-intervention and what we all believe and stand for. So, I mean, this is kind of a layup for the liberty movement right now. I mean, what kind of openings do you see, Dan, here for libertarians and people overall to argue against intervention?
It is. I mean, the gate is open wide. I mean, it's how do you push past the propaganda? I mean, I first started working for Dr. Paul just, you know, like a year or so before we went into Iraq. And I was astonished at how domineering the propaganda was, how, you know, you're a Saddam lover. But that was a walk in the park compared to now. I mean, you literally ceased to exist. So if you challenge the narrative over the past 2 years, the narrative of COVID, of course, and then now it's gotten so much more difficult. I just think that people are, you know, they're just shell-shocked, I guess is the word. They're shell-shocked. It is a great time to make the point for liberty. But it just doesn't seem to be getting through right now.
I think Jeremy Kaufman might get in. Yeah. You could literally run and say, "Hi, I'm running for state senate. I'm not them." That would be enough at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that the narrative is cracking better now than it did in 2003? Like, do you think? I mean, it seems like there was more initial pushback against the war in Iraq, but it didn't seem to fall apart as quickly as this is. Like, this is just so obviously stupid, and people are, you know, more economically, you know, in trouble back home. So do you think that people are starting to realize what a racket this is faster?
I wish I could say yes. I don't know. I mean, I think people are just, you know, they're dizzy. They're knocked upside the head, you know, and, yeah, we see the narrative is collapsing. We see that we see what's happening on the ground. I'm sure that, you know, the three of you follow it as closely as I do, the cauldrons and how these guys are just like basically, you know, like fish in a barrel getting shot. You know, I just, as Ryan said when we started, I mean, it's the next new thing is coming so freaking quickly that there's no time to, you know, to beat the hell out of the people who are lying to us on the last thing. So, I mean, that's what's frustrating.
Yeah. What do you think, Ryan? Do you think it's worse now or worse back then?
From what I'm hearing from the plebs, and I know I talk to people and we have TV media to get a feel for that side, because it's so far from me, I can't without it. They think Ukraine's winning the war and la-ti-da. And, you know, at best they think, yeah, well, the inflation was happening before Putin. So Biden, this is just a distraction they're using. It's all Biden's fault, whatever. What people are mad about, though, because you hit them in the wallet, is gas prices and baby formula and food prices and supply chain and jobs and, you know, the normal things that affect their life. They don't, of course, Ukraine affects their life. They don't see the connection between all the military spending in Ukraine and the rising prices. And they don't see the connection in, you know, sanctioning fertilizer and how that's affecting food prices up. They just know the prices are going up and Biden's the one in charge. It's his fault. So it's kind of like the right thing for the wrong reason, you could say. Yeah. But I wouldn't say they're like more aware and they know everything that's going on. They just know the super obvious, hey, I have to pay more now than I used to. I kind of missed the last guy.
And I think tactically that's our opening. I mean, I would love, you know, to have this idea that we're going to make a superb libertarian argument and everyone is just going to put down their, you know, CNN or whatever and follow us. I don't think it's going to happen that way. But I think a good tactical argument is just kind of an old fashioned, you know, they're ripping you off. They're sending money overseas when you can't even buy gas. Come on. You know, and right. Massey had a great tweet the other day where he said, we sent more money in the last 2 months to Ukraine than we spent on the entire road system in the United States for the past year. Stuff like that, I think, will resonate with people who don't really want to contemplate necessarily a deeper philosophical meaning. And hey, I'll take it. I'll take the tactical victory anytime. You know, I like, you know, I look, you know, kick below the belt. Why not?
You guys should do a tour of Hatteras Island where I'm from, because right now we have houses falling in the ocean.
And I saw the video. Yeah, you
put it. Yeah. RT covered it and Reuters, and that's all I saw. I couldn't find a paper in North Carolina talking about houses in North Carolina falling into the ocean. And of course, I don't have time to get into the whole background why that is. It's not because someone built their house next to the water. When they built those houses, it wasn't next to the water. The beach has been eroding every year because of dredging by the government, burning vegetation by the government, removing sand to fill in a swamp by the government. We're death by government, right? So the old Reagan phrase, the scariest sentence in English language is, "Hi, we're the government. We're here to help." And yeah, it's $40 billion for Ukraine. They couldn't get $7 million for a bridge, right? And we can't do anything like other states that make breakwaters and jetties and other things to protect their infrastructure, because North Carolina is the only state on the East Coast that doesn't have a large port city because of the island chain. Everybody else has a Boston, yeah, or a New York or something, you know, a Miami, a Norfolk, whatever. Carolina doesn't have that, so we don't have the voting power. And unfortunately, Walter Jones Jr. has passed away, and the new guy is just a, you know, run-of-the-mill, do whatever the party says type
Greg
of
tool. Murphy? Is that Greg Murphy, your congressman?
Yeah, District 3.
Yeah.
Just, and I was going to run, actually, when Jones passed away, but that, like, 2 days after, as soon as I said I'm going to run for Congress, they took my YouTube away. I was like, well, I can't raise the funds now, so I didn't do it.
Yeah.
But I think I could have won that district because they all know who I am anyway.
Yeah,
I used to go into the county commission meetings, and people would go to the county commission meetings to see what I'm going to say at the county commission.
It's like original Alex Stein right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it was comedy, but not that kind. It was just speaking truth to power. Right. But yeah.
So, Daniel, I know Ron Paul worked with Dennis Kucinich a lot in Congress. He was able to reach across the aisle and find areas of agreement. Right now, it's amazing, but like none of the Democrats seem to care at all about the poor or about war or about civil liberties, like anything that they're supposed to care about that's good.
Labor.
Is that surprising at all to you, or does that just kind of figure and, you know, just not too surprising? How do you feel about that?
Well, my first letdown was when Obama was elected, because we had a great, cross philosophy anti-war coalition with the progressives on Capitol Hill and the conservatives and libertarians and progressives. And we had a great coalition. And I would, because the Republicans at the time were in leadership. And I was like to the point where I would just pass my progressive counterparts, you know, Republican talking points, so they'd know what to expect in committee hearings and stuff like that. You know, it's like, forget these guys. We're going to do whatever we can. But then as soon as Obama got elected, it sort of dried up. The anti-war stuff dried up to a degree. And that was pretty upsetting. And it was a real eye opener for me. But at this point, I mean, we did a show, I think it was on Thursday, and we put up a picture of Pelosi, and she's flanked by Jim McGovern and Barbara Lee. And I mean, I said to Dr. Paul, these are people who you shared a podium with at press conference after press conference after press conference, saying end the war, out of Iraq, out of Afghanistan. You know, I mean, Barbara Lee was so hardcore anti-war, she voted against going into Afghanistan. And here they are pissed off because the money, the 40 bill, is not going to Zelensky fast enough. It is really depressing. Tulsi's gone. Kucinich is gone. And there's no progressive anti-war movement at all. It's not necessarily a bad thing that the anti-war movement is emerging on the right. And I think that's encouraging. And you have people that are sort of straddling the line, like J.D. Vance, who's brain dead on China, but he, you know, had the courage to say, I don't really care what happens in Ukraine. I couldn't care less. And he was pilloried for it, and he won. So I think, in a sense, it's exciting that the anti-war movement is there on the right, if it can percolate up more, but it still is depressing that there's not a broad coalition.
Dawson, are we so far in our own end zone when we're cheering for Marjorie Taylor Greene making a stink about Ukraine, our base Q army in Congress.
I call them like the right-wing AOCs, the Boberts and Marjorie Taylor Greens, Cawthorn, people like that. But like that, yeah, we're that far in our own end zone. We're like, well, maybe they'll say something. You know, I guess we have Massey. He's not nuts. Yeah. I mean, he's good.
Sometimes
actually,
Matt Gaetz is good too when he's not going across state lines. You know.
You know, it's weird because a lot of these good ones, whatever, they're all compromised.
Well,
and
right.
You saw that with Cawthorn. They came when he came out, and Douglas McGregor talked about this, and he said, "I don't know if I can say this on YouTube." Y'all know what he said about what he was invited to. You know, that's the dark stuff. And you know, I got a map on the wall about that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I guess let's call him Ray Pepstein. he said that, and then instantly, footage comes out, which was weird. Who was filming that? Secretly, yeah. Anyway, of him.
And what friend doing that? That friendship must be dead now. Whoever that was in that video. Yeah.
Yeah, it was an instant shitstorm. You're right. The second he said something, so.
But you could see that with whistleblowers too. When Elliot Spitzer was telling on Wall Street, suddenly it came out he was having an affair with an 18-year-old. Which I was like, oh, at least she's an adult, sorta.
Yeah.
Like that's how far we are in our end zone. I was like, oh, it was with a woman? Wow. Oh, an adult? Wow. You know, because I'm so used to being even worse, right? Vitter was another one. They can't. So any one of these guys that comes out with something, and if they don't have any dirt on you, they go to plan B, which is call you racist. No, they call you racist. Oh. So like Ron Paul, even racist newsletters, you know, that's such a canard. And they did it to Elon Musk recently. He's threatening. He says he's going to buy Twitter and he's threatening us with free speech. They said he's from South Africa, the apartheid, la, 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 la. All through CNN, MSNBC, implying that Elon Musk is a racist. What a joke. But I'm hoping that no longer works, because then I can run. Because I don't have any dirt, sexual dirt, so they call me a racist. And I'm like, when that loses its power, because they just said it about too many people, I will try to run again.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
I'm ready to move back and do it. I'm sick of it, man. Our houses are falling in the water. I'm invigorated now. I'm like, man, I need to get back there and fix it.
Dan, you said you started working with Dr. Paul leading up to the invasion of Iraq. How did you come to meet him and work with him?
Well, I was I told the story a million times. I don't want to bore everyone, but I was living in Budapest, and I was doing a lot of work in the Balkans and Yugoslavia, and I saw the shitstorm that was coming with the 1999 invasion. And that's when I discovered Lou Rockwell and antiwar.com. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm reading this congressman who's like, because I know because I'm there and I'm seeing all the stuff that's happening. And here's a guy who totally gets it and totally sees through it. And so I thought it's like the greatest guy ever. I mean, because I wasn't into politics, you know, just wasn't involved, didn't care. And this is the greatest guy. What's this libertarian stuff? I don't know what it is, but it sounds pretty good. And it's just like a freak occurrence. That when I got back to DC, I went to work for a neocon. I won't go into that detail, certainly not on this show. But I was discovered and fired. I didn't know. I was in Hungary. Like you know, Ryan. I mean, when you're abroad for a long time, you sort of like. I mean, and that was sort of like early internet too. Like I didn't know the fault lines. I didn't give a crap. I was actually hired because I was against NATO expansion, and so was the head of this neocon think tank, and so that was the origin of it. But so anyway, I was fired, and I went to see Dr. Paul. He wasn't available, so I talked to the person who did foreign affairs for him, Joe Becker, and said, hey, you guys were so awesome. I was right there on the ground. I know the crap that was happening. You're so right. And then, you know, I was fired, and like a few weeks later, he called and said, hey, don't say anything, but are you looking for work? And I said, yeah. So it turns out he wanted to quit. He'd been there for a while, and he wanted to make sure, because it was in the middle of a session, that there was someone capable who could replace him. And I had been on Anti-War published. I've been published on Lou Rockwell a bunch of times and stuff. So I was kind of in the club in a way already. So, you know, sorry for the long story, but that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah. No, I was just interested to hear that. You know, it's kind of a light bulb moment for a lot of people when they discover the good doctor and the simplicity of how brilliant it is. It's I mean, it shouldn't be a big mystery to people. But when you hear someone who did reach the corridors of power in Congress, like Dr. Paul did, to be speaking so plainly and so truthfully, because you're so used to people being so treacherous and deceitful and lying and pro-war, that when you hear someone like Ron Paul, or I'm good friends with Dennis Kucinich, a big fan of his too, when you would hear those guys saying what they're saying, you're like, wow, we need another 200 of those guys in there. But
you'll never get them. I mean, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
It'll never happen. It'll never be allowed. But, you know.
I learned about them in fifth grade from an older girl on our bus, because on our island it's K through 12. I guess she was in high school. Her last name was Reed. She was the niece of the dude from Ninja Turtles. But she was adamantly against the first Gulf War. And I was asking, like, well, did anybody say no? And she's like, yeah, Ron Paul. And there was no internet or anything back then, but I just remembered the name because it was like two first names. Yeah, and I was like, as soon as I can find out more, I will. And this is when Walter Beeman Jones Sr. was in office, and we got to go on a field trip to D.C. in fifth grade to talk to him.
Wow.
And I gave him an earful about beach erosion and stuff. And I remember going by and looking, but never talked to him.
Wow.
It's cool.
So, I mean, it is disheartening, like, how many people still buy into everything. But at the same time, I forget who it was, but there was this guy on Tucker Carlson, I think last night, talking about Ron Paul and how he was right about the Federal Reserve. And I mean, you hear a lot more people talking about stuff that was just completely outside of the lexicon, you know, I don't know, 15 years ago. And now people know a lot of that stuff. So is that encouraging at all, that a lot of the stuff that he brought attention to, people are like, he was kind of right about that. And they're talking about them more than they used to, at least.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, it's no longer like, oh, there's this quirky guy talking about the Fed, because there's a lot of people talking about the Fed, you know, on the left and the right. And I think that's good. It's kind of normalized this, you know, this concern over it. You know, the problem, you know, a presidential campaign focuses the mind because it's of a finite nature. And so there's a sense of urgency. And so, you know, Ron Paul hits big in 07, hits big in 11. But when the campaign's over, you know, the problem is that attention wanes, people go on to the rest of their lives. And, you know, that's the real challenge, at least that we feel at the Institute, is trying to, like, maintain that level of interest with the understanding that people, you know, it's not a campaign, it's not a rally, it's, you know, it's something different. So it's a real challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, so Ryan, what do you think about our greatest ally attacking a funeral the other day of an American journalist?
Yeah, I did a video.
I watched it last night.
Abu Alek. I did that ad lib because here I just kind of woke up to that news because the way the time zones are. And I thought, please be Babylon Bee or something. But I mean, this isn't the first time, actually. This is the first time this kind of story's gotten attention. But, you know, they were celebrating the burning down, when the Hilltop Boys burned down a whole family and killed a three-year-old and his parents, or a baby and their parents. The three-year-old survived as missing fingers and burned skin, baby Ali. And they had a party celebrating it, and they held his picture up, and they were stabbing it with daggers and things. A whole room full of adults stabbing the picture of a baby. That's how lost the lunatic state is. They shoot Shireen, and then they tried to blame it on Palestinians. Always scream in pain as they beat you, kind of thing. These weird old, these supremacists. They call them the GCL, God's Chosen Lunatics. And then even Ben Shapiro is out. It's not clear who shot her. It's pretty clear now, with the Israeli police getting out their batons and attacking the coffin. Couldn't even leave the corpse alone. And that's just, and we give them money. We give them billions in forgiven loans every year. Like the foreign aid that's given to Israel, you could build a brand new wall all the way across Mexico every year for what we give away to a racist apartheid regime that has a swath of people that are okay with killing babies. Actually, babies that are born. Of course, there are some Democrats that support birthday abortions too, you know, for the psychological health of the mother. That's something New York put through. I think Virginia shot it down, but they actually, even to suggest that, Nowhere in the discussion of pro-choice and pro-life ever have I heard anybody on the pro-choice side say it's okay to kill a baby 9 months in. That's like, oh, of course not, right?
Yeah.
But no, not with the woke left. You can kill a after it's out, even as long as it hasn't been out that long, you know. It's insane. We really, I would say satanic. Like, these people hate children. They want to give them hormone blockers and stuff. They're okay with killing babies. They're okay with bombing babies. They made slavery great again in Libya. They dumped depleted uranium, which also affects unborn children and stuff. It's like, if there was a human sacrifice thing in, you know, Nancy Pelosi's up there sucking souls through her eyeballs or something, or maybe the resident ginger, that's our new uncensored White House spokesperson, right? They censored Kayleigh McEnany for telling the truth, but the ginger, Pataki or whatever her name is, Balsaki,
she's gone.
Yes, her replacement is even worse, though. And that had to be a challenge. They're like, okay, you know how, remember the joke we have, how could we get dumber, and we ended up with Kamala? The new person, what's her name? Pierre,
yeah,
or whatever.
Jean-Pierre or something.
I just know she checks a lot of boxes. She's, I think she's cis, but she's gay, and she's black, and she's a woman. So that was, I think, what really mattered the most. But.
Yeah, she's LBTQRSTUV -7 square root of 11, whatever. And yeah, she's female. Oh, we can't say that. You can't say woman because we don't know what a woman is. So just
we do again now. Like, there was no such thing as a woman until the.
Like, can you define black, please? Can you define black? Like, how much pigment does it take to become? Then you're black, right?
So, Daniel, now that we're probably giving $40 billion to Ukraine, do you think?
Breaking up there, Reed.
It broke up a little bit, Reed.
Can you hear me now?
The NSA just got hold of you, bud.
Yeah. Oh, am I still breaking up, or am I coming through clear?
Better now, yeah.
Okay, Daniel, I was asking you, do you think now that we've given $40 billion to Ukraine that Israel is going to be upset there in second place and we're going to have to give them $41
billion? I was thinking about that. Yeah, I was thinking about that. That's interesting, you know. They were number one. Now they're not anymore. And they've taken, it's interesting. I don't know if you guys have been noticing this, but, you know, Russia's always had an interesting relationship with Israel. I mean, Putin has had a decent relationship with Netanyahu and Bennett, and has had to. But there seems to have been a real break. I mean, we have the whole Lavrov thing with, Hitler was Jewish and didn't back down. There have been a couple of other things that Lavrov said. And, you know, Russia's pretty PO'd at Israel for going along with the Ukraine thing. I haven't seen this kind of an obvious break between Russia and Israel since I've been watching things. I'm sure Ryan watches it a lot more closely. But are you guys sensing this? Does this seem a little weird and unprecedented?
Well, the big thing is they recognize the Golan Heights as part of Syria.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot that part. Yeah.
Yep. And then Syria also recognized, is the only other state, I think, besides some little ones, Belarus, I think, too, that recognized the independent territories in Donbass. They immediately did that. I thought, yeah, have them. But you know what you ought to do is recognize every Native American nation in the U.S. and they'll all recognize you back. And that's a PR nightmare. What are they going to do about it, right? You're like, if you recognize Lakota Nation or something, like, okay, and then they recognize Donbass. It's just Chad all the way. But yeah, that's huge. And then he's wrong about his Hitler comments, but that is something a lot of people believe. And it wouldn't matter if he was part Jewish or not. I mean, he did what he did. But the point he was making is it doesn't matter. People are confused, like, oh, how could Zelensky work with Nazis if he's Jewish? I'm like, well, how does Israel work with Al Qaeda right now?
Yeah.
Right. You know, they're both attacking Syria. That doesn't bother them because Zionism has nothing to do with Judaism. They don't give up about Jews, they care about commercial interests. And it's religion, their real religion is worshiping themselves. Theological Judaism has nothing to do with, it's just a religious theme to justify or to use as a shield against critics. So, like, they can bulldoze down private property and replace it with their own ethnic group, which is just, you know, a racist apartheid regime. But if you say anything about it, then they'll yell anti-Semite. So it's just a canard to stave off critics, because if you yell racism, the entire left shuts down, right? And then couching yourself in Judeo-Christianity, the whole right shuts down. So no one's criticizing your actions, all the way to the point where they openly just run over people with bulldozers like they did Rachel Corrie, right? And Mersheimer, John Mersheimer, actually, who was a co-author of the book on the lobby, he had a talk one time, I think it was at one of those DC events with Grant Smith. I know Grant was there. I don't know if that's what the event was, but he said, what would happen if you or I went down there and they just killed us? Nothing. And they don't care. The U.S. wouldn't do anything. American gets shot. American gets run over the bulldozer. And we just had a journalist shot, and then they attacked the funeral. Nothing happened. Will anything happen from the U.S. side about Israel attacking funerals? No, because the U.S. attacks funerals. They drone strike funerals all the time, right? Double tap. But speaking of the $40 billion you said, is Israel going to be jealous because first time ever, you know, they're going to be outpaced? Well, I mean, why is Joe Biden only given half the aid to Ukraine that he gave to the Taliban? Didn't they walk away with like $80 billion worth of weapons?
It's true.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And you know what they're doing? They're just sending junk, like junk howitzers and outdated stuff to Ukraine. And then they turn around. They did $1.4 billion of replacement weapons to offset what the aid we gave Ukraine. But it's not equivalent. Like, they're making the brand newest generation whatever for, you know, F-35. I'm keeping going. That stuff. And then they just send obsolete weaponry to Ukraine, which won't even make it to the front most likely. And if it does, it doesn't work. They won't be able to repair it. And Russia outpaces even our best stuff anyway. So it's just a meat grinder. They're willing to, you know, fight to the last Ukrainian. They could care less. And that's the worst thing, is they act like, oh, we love Ukraine, and it's the total opposite. Anybody that really cares about Ukraine would want the war to end and, you know, look, acknowledge what you to get out of NATO, make concessions, make these promises. But you ain't got Finland walking the opposite direction. They want to join NATO. That's a thing, but that's not the big thing. They're agreeing to put F-35As in Finland, which can carry nuclear warheads. Now, Matt, this is the whole act of put yourself in someone else's shoes, right? We don't have this ability with American exceptionalism, but just imagine if Russia put attack planes in Mexico that could carry nuclear bombs. We'd invade Mexico. Or you don't even have to imagine. Imagine if they had attack planes or, let's say, missiles in Cuba that had nuclear warheads. What would we do? Oh, we'd do the Bay of Pigs is what we'd do. Bay of Pigs failed, by the way, because the ground support is the exact opposite of what they say. He's like, Kennedy didn't send air support. Yes, he did. The ground support wasn't there. The anti-craft Cubans weren't there, and they weren't there because they didn't have the weapons we thought they did, because they diverted those to Israel. Full and circle. Kennedy figured all this out, and somebody shot him. Yeah. And then his brother was shot by a Palestinian Christian. All by himself, Sirhan. Won't get into those rabbit holes. But nowadays, you wouldn't even be allowed to question those things. Any conspiracy the left has, Russiagate or whatever, can't talk about it. But you want to talk about Ashley's diary or Hunter's laptop or, you know, mail-in votes or whatever, you or COVID, the Fauci virus, not allowed. You're not allowed to even entertain those things. The Ministry of Truth will clamp down on you, banned on all social media, and never get on mass media. And financial things like PayPal and Patreon kick you off, as they just did to Consortium News, and I believe Mint Press got kicked off PayPal. Yeah. You know, I opened the oven door. I said, "Hi guys, been waiting for you a long time." 2014, I got kicked off PayPal the first time.
So, Daniel, do you have any predictions about how the midterms will play out? And then after that, what do you think the GOP primary looks like in 24?
It's just terrible, isn't it? I mean, yeah, we had 57 no votes on the $40 billion. And as you point out, there's some pretty unreliable people in there. I mean, the Republicans, this was theirs to lose. And they've been so stupid on this war They've misread the American people. We saw, I mean, there was a new poll. I'm sure you guys saw it. The Democracy Institute or whatever did a poll showing that people aren't buying the Putin price hike thing. They don't give a crap if Ukraine loses. It's just not resonating. But the Republicans, being as dumb as they are not. I mean, this is the perfect wedge issue for them to say that the Democrats are shoveling, you know, tons of money in a no-win war, in a proxy war. They're not doing it. They've never seen a war that they don't like. So, I mean, even if you feel good about winning, you're still going to have McConnell. You're still going to have McCarthy. You're still going to have the guys. I mean, these guys have so much power. I mean, I sound like an old timer. I guess I am. But it was even in the mid-2000s when I was in, it was so different. You know, an individual member, now it wasn't like a senator, but an individual member still had some pretty serious power. I mean, we did appropriations bills. You know, kids nowadays, they've never heard of it. It's like an 8-track cassette, right? Appropriations bills had an open rule. You could go down and you could claim time and you could strike funds from X and you could talk about it for 10 minutes. 5 minutes, whatever. You grab Kucinich to come down and talk about it. I mean, that was the only place where there was actually some debate going on, and that's gone. So everything is in the hands of leadership, and even if the Republicans win, the leadership is going to be two of the most evil. I can't say the R word because I'll get banned, but you know what I mean. You know, corrupt people on earth.
It seems, I hope you guys can hear me right now, but it seems like the Republicans who are kind of good on Russia, they're even worse on China than the establishment Republicans are. Do you think there's any hope of that changing? That like people like Tucker Carlson, we can wake them up on China? Because none of us like China here. We all hate China. But I mean, you know, being a war hawk on China isn't the solution, obviously.
Well, I hate China for the right reasons, because they want not because they're capitalists. That's the one good thing about them. The only good thing, right. All the crappy stuff about China is the stuff they love. The left loves it. The social credit system, the attack on free speech. I mean, all the really bad stuff about China, you know, the militant atheism. You know, I spent some time in China too. I mean, it just, all the bad stuff is the stuff that the left likes about it. And all the good stuff they hate about it. So, you know, Tucker, it's a blind spot. But you have this whole thing with Republicans. Yeah, okay, I don't want war with Russia because we got to go to war with China. You know, so,
right.
You know, you missed the main point. No, we don't need to go to war with anyone.
Exactly. And for 2024, do you have any thoughts on what that primary might look like, or anyone you'd like to see run?
I mean, I think a lot of the steam is out of Trump, don't you guys think? I mean, he's out there. He brought the Johnson & Johnson guy on stage, and everyone was like, you know, like he passed gas in the microphone. I mean, nobody was excited about this. The guy, his hands, fingers are not on the pulse anymore. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a little, you know, it's depressing, you know. And look, I mean, you know, I'm sure Ryan, you know, feels the same way I do. You've got a pretty good governor in Florida on a lot of things. But there's a big blind spot. You know, where did he hold the first meeting of his staff? It wasn't in the U.S. even, right?
Mm-hmm. So, that's again how far back we are in our own end zone. I'll overlook that just because he's so good on COVID and some other things. Eric, we have the Shekel chat requesting a comment from Jesse Ventura.
Well, I'll tell you what. You give me Nancy Pelosi 15 minutes in a waterboard, and I'll get her confessing to the Sharon Tate murders. Yeah, Daniel, I do a lot of impressions. I try to be the comic relief of the Four Horsemen in the apocalypse here, you know?
That was great.
I do a Ron Paul impression. Well, Daniel's a smart guy. I really enjoyed working with him. He likes to extol the virtues of freedom and liberty and free markets and non-interventionalism and getting rid of the Federal Reserve are all great things. What do you all stand for, Daniel, right? I just followed the Constitution when I was in there, and I earned a nickname, Dr. No. Dr. No cured my apathy.
Your Rand Paul's better, I think. But
Mike, I have a twin brother. He does Rand pretty well.
Oh, excuse me. I actually fell for that. And I get the same stuff with my brother. I also have a twin.
Yeah, we're both twins.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, there's all kinds of twins.
Reed, where's your twin? What's up, dude?
He doesn't look that much like me. My brothers and I are not interchangeable.
He's in the Donbass with Zelensky right now on the $40 billion that's been appropriated.
If you shaved the beard and kept the mustache, you'd be a spitting image of John Wilkes Booth.
There we go. That's high praise coming from you.
Claim relations.
So, Daniel, is Dr. Paul still bicycling, riding his bike a lot, or?
Every day, you know, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I go to church on Sunday, and every, you know, we'll drive past and we'll see him. It's like 8 a.m. and he's on the same path, doing his walk, doing his 4 miles a day, you know. And it's kind of funny because it's not for him. It's not just about fitness. Fitness obviously helps. But he always says that that's how he works out his problems. It's actually like his therapy, you know. Yeah. When he walks, it's just how he deals with things that are bothering him, you know. And it's probably a pretty good way to do it, you know, rather than sitting around with the bottle or whatever. You know, he's got a, you know, good way of doing it. But I'll tell you what, it's mid-May now, and it's getting hot. I was working out in the yard today with 87 degrees, high humidity. Mm. And it doesn't exercise outside is not very fun. It doesn't bother him though. So,
you know, that's better walking than Johnny Walker. I do walk and talks, but I do them at night, so it's not so hot. And one reason so I don't wake up the babies, but I have the same feeling like if I'm walking around, I just think better. Like, it's more natural for me to walk around and talk than sitting in a chair. Even if I'm listening to someone's podcast or something, I don't want to sit still. I'm like, well, I can walk around and listen to this, or I could go to the gym and listen to this. I can't just sit in a chair and listen to a podcast. Yeah. Gotta
be on something else. That's where I listen to Dawson and Corbett when I'm at the gym.
All the Japanese expats, man.
Yeah.
He was on the show.
Yeah, we had Corbett, you know,
Mike,
on.
Michael, Kyle, and Corbett and I all were in the same establishment together. Gilad Osman was there, too.
Wow.
And another journalist named Jeffries, lesser known. But I had had Mike on my show on the anniversary of the Iraq War, like March 20th, to go over the whole neocon narrative and the Office of Special Plans, da-da-da-da-da. And then when we went off air, he mentioned that he was interviewing Gilad Osman. I go, oh, I'm interviewing him too, like through the computer. He goes, oh, he's in Japan. I go, what? Oh, he's in Osaka. What? And so that's how I met Mike. I'd known Mike's work, and then I finally interviewed him on the podcast. And then I knew he lived in Japan, but I didn't know where, and he was only like 40 minutes away. That's how we met each other.
Wow.
And, Gilad, and I knew James through his work too. I met him in person the first time that day as well. Yeah.
That's a pretty serious expat community there.
Yeah. James was having his first kid, and he was super nervous. I was giving him dad advice.
Daddy Dawson.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, how much censorship did you guys deal with on the Liberty Report throughout the last couple of years? I know you got like locked out of your Facebook or something at one point. But other than that, how hard did they come after you?
A couple of times we got locked out. You know, I do think I hate to say it in public. I think we have a slight insurance policy because of the name of the person of the show. You know, it helps a little bit, I think. Mm-hmm. Of course, it always does till it doesn't. It's like diplomatic immunity, right? It's always great until it doesn't work.
We lost a YouTube channel that you weren't using that much, right?
I did for a while, then I got it back. For some reason, I don't know why. But, you know, it's the worst thing is the self-censorship. And it's, you know, mm-hmm. You know, I'm ashamed to say it, but during COVID, I know that I self-censored. I didn't say what I wanted to say. And I know Dr. Paul didn't self-censor, and so I'm always on pins and needles when he's talking because he's just incapable of doing that. But you know, it's like when you face something like that and you realize, you know, I'm not as much of a badass as I thought I was, because you know what? You know, I bit my tongue, I didn't say it the way I really wanted to say it. And that kind of sucks, but you know, I didn't want to lose our audience either. So I don't know what the right answer is.
Well, you're smart, because I have a hard time self-censoring, but I've also paid the consequences for it. Yeah, many times.
If legend precedes him. The one video Jackman Radio had removed from our YouTube page was an interview we did with Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s right-hand woman at the National Children's Defense Fund group that he runs. And we had a great hour conversation. And like you said, Daniel, I bit my tongue the whole time the last 2 years of the Flu World Order. I kept my mouth shut. I didn't say the wrong things. I didn't, you know, and we finally let it rip with her for an hour. And within 16 hours, that video was nuked.
Yeah.
Oh, I just lost my Discord. I forgot to mention that. And it was over the Fauci virus. I forgot how many years we had a Discord. I kind of quit using it and went to Telegram, just had a bot reposting my stuff over there. But yeah, our Discord's gone. Second Discord we've lost over Rona. I think Reed's only horseman they censored was the one with myself, Fitzgerald, and Nelson talking adult stuff about 9/11.
Yep.
Okay, it's weird because you can say whatever kook theory you want, and it's got millions of views on YouTube. But if you start talking about what actually happened, you're gone, right? The disinformation police come in. And all we're saying is stuff that's already admitted by our own FBI. And all we're doing is connecting dots, right? And, well, that's not all we're doing, but they don't want you to talk about that. But I got a series coming. I did 2 hours with Fitzgerald. I'm going to talk to Nelson after I get back from Texas. And then I'm going on again with Fitzgerald. And we're going to just do each plane, the whole story, no matter how long it takes. And I guess we'll keep it on Odyssey or BitChute or something. Well, they'll never let us on YouTube again. And that's failed.
And so speaking of Texas, all four of us, because Daniel will be there, but the three of us, we're going to go to Texas early June for Ron Paul's event. So he's still doing events. He's still at it, Daniel. What's this next event about? What's going to be going on?
Yeah, I love our image for it. You know, my wife is a graphic designer and she did it, you know, of this thing of Biden, you know, that famous picture of him, and it's got he's green. I just really dig it. But it's, you know, the Biden doctrine, new world order, or nuclear Armageddon. And it's in Houston. It's a smaller conference. It's not, we do a big one in DC and we're going to do that. Actually, you guys, the Four Horsemen will be the first to know. It'll be on September 3rd, Labor Day weekend. I haven't announced that yet, but
big scoop.
Yeah, big scoop. There we go. But we'll have four or five speakers here. We've got Scott Ritter, who's been great on what's going on in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Lou Rockwell is going to be there. Dr. Paul, myself, probably one other person we'll announce soon is going to be there. So it's just, you know, it's going to be a great event. And we've got three this year, which we've never done. We've got that one. We've got the DC one, which is going to be about the title. Here's another scoop. The title is Anatomy of a Police State. And we're going to do that one. And then we're going to come back to Lake Jackson on the war on speech, which was canceled. That was supposed to be in May of 2020, and COVID got it canceled. So we're going to bring that back, mostly because I also really liked the logo for that one. So that's one of the main reasons we're going to do that one. So
have you lined up speakers for the war on speech one?
I haven't for that one yet. Originally, we were going to have like Jonathan Turley, who's great on speech. But I haven't yet. I'm going to start thinking about it. I'm right now, I'm just doing my list, and I've got like 10 or 15 people that I want to narrow down for the Anatomy of a Police State conference.
Yeah.
So
that sounds like something Alex Jones would talk about, the police state, Daniel. We've been battling it for years.
That was good.
Just like Dr. Paul said, the answer to 1984 is 1776. SaveInfoWars.com. That'll be a good conference, though. Yeah, that's encouraging that Dr. Paul is still out doing it, and it's inspiring. You know, I've been into him for 15 years, and that dictates when I'm going to support a candidate. You know, how closely aligned are they with Ron Paul's views of foreign policy? Is really the main thing. And then everything else, you know, I can deal with differences and disagreements, but that, to me, that's like the North Star of supporting someone for office. So.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's the easiest one to get wrong too, because it's, I mean, most Americans, you guys know this, Ron, you know, I mean, Americans don't travel. And so they don't know anything about the rest of the world. And they think they think it's what it's like, you know, on TV or something. I lived overseas for not as long as Ryan, but for a long time. And it's just, it's different when you travel, when you live overseas, you understand the world differently. And I mean, that's fine if you don't travel, but don't try to run the world then, because you don't know crap about it.
Some people don't travel out of their own town even.
Yeah.
When you're outside and then go back in, you get what we call reverse culture shock, because in your head, it was a certain way. And when you've been removed long enough, and when you've been removed from the state propaganda long enough, like, you're not getting that media anymore. And then you look back and it's so cartoonishly clownish and stupid.
It really is.
True.
I mean, I was already there before I left and it got worse. But I think it really got worse. Like, even if I say it seems to be, when we had like Walter Cronkite or whatever, the media now with like the Rachel Maddows and stuff, it's like Dora the Explorer. They scream talk the whole time. All they ever do is lie. Always. They are incapable of telling the truth. They have to at least exaggerate. You can't. It's like any New Yorker talking about
it. They're all pitchmen for pharma, the banks, and the military. That's all our media is. They're just pitchmen. They're not providers of news. You know, which is scoundrels. Wow.
53 minutes before you got to the bell.
It's been like that since Lincoln, right? He shut down the papers. That's when the state and media married, is when Lincoln came in and shut down the newspapers except for his own. And it never returned. The free press never came back. Washington's always had control of the papers, and then later the networks, you know, and now social media. All these social media, when they started getting brought before Congress, then they basically said, do it or else, and they all complied.
Yeah.
They can't. Google even said, remember, we can't let there be another 2016. Right? They want their side to win, the Silicon Valley. I hope Elon moves the whole apparatus out of San Francisco, put it in Texas or somewhere in the South, right? Or get rid of it. Why would you need a headquarters for Twitter? Don't they all work from home? It seems like.
Put it up on Mars. Well, Daniel,
you'll have to wait to come to Daniel's event. I mean, that's I'm going all. I was just spent money to go to the U.S., but this is worth it. And thanks to everybody that donated for that trip. By the way, we will be there. Yep, a lot of ANC is going to be there. The Horsemen will be there. I believe Pug's coming too, and a lot of the crew that people don't see will be the youth contingent, maybe.
Daniel, I want some good barbecue. You got to point us to some good barbecue.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I will think of something near Houston, definitely.
I want a tomahawk steak.
Yeah, I want a big old. I want a Liberty steak with Dr. Paul.
I'm like 50-50 about like seeing McAdams and Paul and Ritter and Lou Rockwell or tomahawk steak. The only thing I miss about the U.S. is the food. It is ridiculously large in portions, which isn't good every day. But hey, I'm on a vacation, right? So
treat yourself. You know, we're gonna have to watch out for drone strikes while all of us are in the same place. That's kind of a dangerous idea. But
don't give them those ideas, man.
I know Daniel's got to get going, so let's do plugs real quick, and then we'll get out of here. But Eric, where can people keep up with you and what you're doing?
Yeah, thanks, Reed and Daniel. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to meet you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in a few weeks. Everybody, please subscribe to my channel on YouTube, Jackman Radio. We've been building that up and building up subscribers, and I'm on Twitter at Jackman Radio and on Instagram. And if you like what we do, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/Jackman Radio.
Oh, something's
Ryan, that was mine.
I thought I was getting canceled off this. Yeah, I'm banned on all the stuff he just said, but I'm on the alt stuff, Telegram, Substack. The links are below, BitChute, Odyssey, all the really deep basement oven stuff. But ANCReport.com, Anti-Neocon Report. We do a show every day, sometimes two, usually. And Telegram is sort of our Twitter. VK is our Facebook, Substack is our Patreon, and that's how we roll there. And Odyssey, I see the Libertarian Institute's on there, the Ron Paul Institute's on there, RT's on there. So, you know, a lot of big names coming over to Odyssey. Come with it. Tower Gang's on there, right, Reed?
Yeah, Tower Gang is on
there. And I've been on there for 5 years or something, or whenever it started. It was one of the first people to join library. So we're building that up. Building up the media is everything, guys. Like, we can argue about and we discuss who's going to be next president, whatever. Who else in government doesn't matter until we fix the press. Every single war they start starts with a lie, and every single lie starts with mass media. So if you change the media, that's what predicates everything that comes after it. And I think we need to focus on that more than who all gets into office. And that's why these conferences like what's in Texas, these kind of forums and lectures and media, that needs to be spread this message needs to be spread everywhere. And unfortunately, they're not going to allow it on the YouTubes and stuff, where they'll shadow ban it minimal. So you got to get out there and help build up alt. So that's what we're doing. ANCReport.com.
You scum. Shout out, little chili. Excuse me.
For worse.
Yeah, and Daniel, where can people keep up with you?
RonPaulInstitute.org. We're on YouTube. We're also on Rumble and Odyssey as well. But, you know, Ryan, what you said about Telegram is interesting because I had always thought it was really clunky. But, the Institute, it has a Twitter account. And so it follows a lot of things pro-Ukraine and pro-Russia. And then all the pro-Russian ones were just getting knocked off. And I need to see both sides. And so I finally was kicking and screaming over to Telegram. And it's actually really fascinating over there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Let me give you some links because I'm on all that stuff. Yeah, they banned Scott Ritter. They banned Pepe Escobar. They banned Philip. They banned me. Everybody from Consortium News, all the Robert Perry crew and stuff, they don't have Twitter accounts. But on Telegram, I've got some really great Russian telegrams and inside scoop on there. Maybe I should put.
You got to share them. Yeah, I've got quite a few. But yeah, I mean, I'm into it. It's not that hard to get used to. It's just, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a go-to place for information. I don't know what I'd do, how I'd share my own information without it, really. Like you said, even though you do have a Twitter left, you got to self-censor in a way because.
And it's also boring. It's just one side. You know, yep. I mean, I want to find out what happened to this bridgehead. I'm sure you guys are looking at it too.
Going towards Slavyansk, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I want to know what happened because the claim was that 1,500 Russians were killed and, you know, 70 pieces of equipment. And so, I mean, it's not clear. And so you can't just go to Twitter, obviously, you know, so you have to move around and you have to try to put things together and figure out what happened. And thanks. I mean, Telegram is great for that kind of thing to get the other side.
Yeah, Twitter's so
right
bad.
About the media. You're so right about the media, Ryan. You are so right.
Yeah, that's why I was excited when you had the conference about censorship and free speech. I got a lot to say about censorship. I've been getting censored since AOL hometown, right?
It's PO Box. The Hatteras got censored.
If you want to come back in the autumn, you know, you can give it.
It's expensive to come to the U.S., but for maybe. I mean, we'll see how things are going. Since I've been – when I lost my big YouTube channel for that, I couldn't get returned. You know, I got it returned like 5 times because I never actually broke any rules. Now they don't care. There's unwritten rules and written rules. And when you break an unwritten rule, they accuse you of breaking a written rule even though you didn't. And then they're judge, jury, and executioner. And this, people say it's a private company and do what they want. BS. It's breach of contract because they say you're a partner, right? You're a partner with YouTube legally. And they say, here's the rules, which they've actually written down. These are our terms of service. You can't engage in, you know, threats of violence and hate speech, which is defined by advocating violence for ABCDEFG groups, blah, blah, blah. But then they've got the unwritten rules. And I know the unwritten rules too late because Sean Atwood got them. He got his channel had 700,000 something followers. They kicked him off YouTube because of covering Epstein, basically. And then they basically said, yeah, you can't talk about COVID. You can't talk about Epstein. You can't talk about Israel. You can't talk about Ukraine. You can't all the things I talk about all the time, right? But that's not in their rules, right? So they just banned me. They didn't even give me any strikes. They just said, oh, it was something like, repeated violations of community standards. I'm like, okay, where are these violations? What are they? Which videos are they? You don't get to do it. And any other business, if I got fired for like, let's say sexism or whatever, racism or something, I could say, nuh-uh, and take them to court and a judge would decide if I engage in those activities or not. But with YouTube, it's their trust and safety committee. So they are judge, jury, and executioner, right? So all this fiddling around with Section 230, forget about it. It's a breach of contract law, and people ought to be able to sue them because they don't have a third party to arbitrate disputes about whether or not their partner engaged in activity that was against the rules. It's all you're doing. All they're doing is using those rules as an excuse to ban people who say things that they politically don't like. And everybody knows that. And if I had a money for a lawyer, I would sue the piss out of them. But I don't. So. Yeah.
Well, I might be the next to get banned, so everyone make sure you follow me on Odyssey as well. The links to follow all these guys are in the description, as well as me on other platforms, so go do that. And like we said, we'll be in Texas in the beginning of June. I'll be at the Libertarian Party National Convention, 2 weeks from now. And then I'll be moving back to New Hampshire right after we go to Texas. Ooh. So lots in the near future. But thanks for watching, everybody. If you're new, please subscribe to the channel and we'll catch you on the next episode.